Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hi, everyone. It's your host, Tim Rutten here. We've got a very special episode for you today, which is featuring the Forrester Principal Analyst, Ewart Smith. Jouk and I got the chance to speak with him recently about Forrester's predictions for 2025. And over the course of the next three episodes, we'll explore everything from the decline in banking customer experiences to how digital transformation can actually help banks achieve operational excellence. So stay tuned and enjoy this first episode. Welcome back to another episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers in banking. And today I'm being joined again by Jouk Pleiter, our founder CEO. Good to see you, Jouk. Welcome back.
Good to see you, Tim. Great.
Very nice. But even more so, we have Ewart Smith with us, the VP of Digital Banking with Forrester. Ewart, it's so good to meet you here in the podcast.
Hello again, Tim and Jouk. Very nice to see you guys again.
Likewise. Now, for today, we have one specific topic to cover, which is the fact that Ewart recently shared his research on the 8 trends that are transforming the banking technology architecture landscape. Very detailed report, of course. And in the coming hour, we're going to just walk through the different insights that you've come across, Ewart. Next to that, you've now been in your role for the majority of a year. So I think it's also very interesting to maybe start off with your initial view of where the industry currently is and what your main observations are before we dive into the research.
Yeah, happy to. And for those who don't know me, I was 10 years at Forrester, and in that time, mostly in our consulting team, leading our financial services practice. But last year, as Tim mentioned, right around this time of year last year, I took over the role of the banking technology analyst. And so I'm covering globally the technologies that drive banks to be able to do the things they wish to do with customers, with corporate clients, investment clients, and beyond through the open banking capabilities. And I came into this knowing a lot about that, you know, having worked here for many years, working with financial services clients of all types, from insurance companies all the way through to banks. But it has been an eye-opening year in that I think that the biggest learning is how, and I knew this going in, but how much inertia there exists in banks, you know, against the kinds of changes that are needed for them to be able to succeed in the marketplace, to deliver the kinds of things that customers are looking for and the kinds of things that corporate clients are looking for. There's some very innovative banks out there that are doing very interesting things. Everybody is trying to do some kind of digital transformation. It's on everybody's radar. And now everything is about AI and generative AI and trying to figure out what to do with that. And money is moving into those teams that are doing things there. But the core infrastructure, I think, you know, maybe the second biggest find is the core infrastructure is the thing that has stopped most progress at this point. Everything in that tech stack from the glass all the way down. People are doing bits and pieces of things around the edges, and I think they've pushed the limit to where there's still probably a little bit of room to push, but until they make some more fundamental changes to the infrastructure, to their architectures, I don't think they can go a whole lot further. And so I think we're at that tipping point. And I think a lot of the technology, that's the other side of it, is that a lot of the technology companies have really pushed the envelope to the place where these things are now really possible. They're robust. They're ready for prime time, as many bank clients have told me. And we're not in the 2020 range where, you know, things are still sort of pie in the sky and it's, you know, new school vendors and those kinds of things. I think we've moved way beyond that now. And I think it's an opportunity for banks that are at the core, at the forefront of their marketplace to really push the envelope and do some big things. But they've got to take that first step in the back office systems capabilities.
That's kind of interesting. Like, what is kind of causing this inertia from your vantage point? I mean, there's progressive banks, but there's also a whole bunch of people that for some reason like to stay a little bit in the status quo. They're kind of tuning it a little bit on the edges to your, from your part. Like, what is causing it?
Well, I think that there's probably two big drivers of that. One is the IT team itself, or the technology groups within the organization, and their comfort, capabilities, their knowledge. A lot of these trends that I wrote about in the in that report that you referred to, require some different skills, sometimes many different skills, and at least an upgrading of skills across the tech teams. That's part of it. They're comfortable with certain systems. I've talked to banks that say, we like platform A because, we've used it for the last 20 years. We know it. Our architects, our designers, our developers know it. And so they're stuck at some level by their own design, their own devices. I think the other big one, of course, is the compliance and regulatory teams that fear some of these changes, and they fear how it will impact their ability to be compliant and to meet the needs of regulators. So, and oftentimes they're not as opposed to change as you might think, but the rest of the organization tends to think they are, or they're going to be, and they pull the reins back on things because compliance won't let us or something like that. And there are so many regs that are evolving very quickly that it makes it hard for them to feel like they can make these changes, knowing that, well, everything might change in a year, depending on how, some new, regulation might play out. What I think is interesting is that most of these systems are designed flexibly so that they can adapt to those kinds of situations far easier than the system that they're currently on, the big monolith that they're currently on. So, in fact, regulators tend to be driving forces to moving people towards these new platforms than impediments to it. But internally at the bank, it's kind of seen, the reverse of that.
So this is an opportunity in a way, right? Just to actually maybe also go to the progressive business leaders and say, hey, the good news is that regardless of compliance or classic IT views, you are now in a very different world where these accelerators are proven, they are there. So it sounds like we have to get the word out.
I think that's a big challenge. I've talked to a payments network company just in the last couple of days, and their challenge isn't the technology, and isn't even in the bank. The connections, the ability to connect into some of these payment capabilities, it's that they don't know what the implications of not doing these things are from a regulatory standpoint, even some current regulations. So how do they get the word out to the banks that these things are possible, desired by regulators, they fit perfectly with the requirements that they have, and are adaptable so that in the future when a new act, especially around AI, comes out, you'll be able to flex very quickly and very easily to support the kinds of reporting or the kinds of monitoring that might be required, and get that word out to the banks so that they understand it.
Yeah, historically, people were really averse like these big bank programs, and it would be a career-limiting move. So we see more and more talk about progressive modernization, where you can slice and dice it, and you kind of make a little step. But it's not just scratching it on the surface, but you take real business value, you take a real customer journey, you lock that in, and then progressively you transform the bank in a time frame of 5 years.
Yeah. I think that's a huge trend, as it were, in terms of the implementation. The big bang, or all at once, or the entire bank kind of rip and replace processes, are a thing of the 2000s, early 2000s. We are now in the era of progressive modernization, which is facilitated by these decoupled, layered, headless architectures that are facilitated by everything that's underneath that, which is the API enabled, API first, event driven, and microservices, or even serverless based architectures that are enabling these composable components that can be put together, and that allows you to build solutions in a domain, or in a an enterprise level domain that covers every kind of client, maybe a payments hub of some kind, or maybe just an experience in one domain, and to be able to then implement there. I think that gives the banks a lot of comfort. So I think to our earlier conversation, part of the challenge of marketing is that these technology companies tend to market directly to the IT teams, maybe some kind of vendor management organization. They tend not to think about the other departments or teams at a bank. So they're not thinking, I got to also market to legal and compliance and privacy and so on, marketing and others. And I need to build a way to go to market that thinks about that entire team and sell them all at the same time, because they're all going to be needed to be able to make these things work. But then you can slice and dice, as you said, and you can bring all those players to a single domain, a single thing. Build skills, build knowledge, understand the tool, how it works, build those skills that we talked about earlier. And now you can start to make it easier. And it's also easier on building a business case to keep adding new parts of the bank into this overall new system.
Yeah, one observation here would be that the, let's say, software vendors selling to the banks, traditionally they just focus on the technology leader or maybe the business leader to sell a certain level of a solution. Your statement to me resonates because it basically indicates that it's a strategic moment in time to potentially choose for one single view on how to modernize the complete banking ecosystem when it comes to technology and architecture, which also means you need to speak with all these different stakeholders. You need to bring them along in the journey. And I think that's also very well reflected in the report that you've delivered with the key imperatives, which in the end of the day have an impact on your architectural decisions, but they actually start with what is the business need that we have? What's the objective we should tackle as a total organization? Maybe if it's all right with you, Jort, we can step by step go through these strategic imperatives and get your view, and then we can debate within those imperatives whether they, do they hold true? Is it maybe still far out? Like, where are we in that journey? So without further ado, the first one that you had in the report is enhanced customer experiences, where the business need is to deliver highly personalized contextual experiences across all touch points. What's the view there that you found, and what should be in place for the future?
Yeah, these I think there were six of them. They are the key things that strategically banks and even probably broader all financial services entities, have to do in order to stay relevant, stay competitive, stay profitable, keep growing. And when we talk to banks, these are the key things they're focused on, and they really stem from those challenges that were discussed. Sort of the basic situation that banks find themselves in with, sort of changing customer expectations and continuing pressure from competitors, new business models, and regulatory pressures, and so on. That set of drivers, as it were, set up these imperatives, and they're universal across the bank. They're the strategic big drivers, and this one is really number one: is that customers are demanding a much deeper experience from everything, not just banks, from everything. They need it ubiquitous wherever they are, on whatever channel or whatever device they are on. They want that experience to be essentially the same as they have anywhere else. They want it to connect. So they want the data from one part of it to flow to the other, whether it's just their login information or whether it's the context of what they've been dealing with. Contextual, they're no longer tethered to a desktop. So they're on a mobile phone or they're on some other device, might even be just in their car. Whatever these devices are, they're everywhere, and we should know where they are, what the context is, and how to serve them, with given their permission. As a privacy issue, but to the extent that they're willing to let you have that kind of information and use it to support them, which is a bank challenge, they have to make that case. They have a lot of ability to bring that to bear, and customers are expecting them to take action on their behalf and to provide recommendations on their behalf and be very proactive and prescriptive, give them insights, help them make decisions, and so on a personal, individualized basis. That's what customers are demanding. That's what banks have to be able to do if they want to remain competitive, because somebody's going to do it. And some of the fintechs are already pretty close to that, that level of sort of personalization. I think banks hate the word hyper-personalization, but a lot of the vendors use that term. But it's, this extreme amount of, like, I've got all this data and I have all this insight about you. I can make a lot of things happen for you on your behalf and make your life a lot better. That can't be done with existing monolithic platforms. It's just not possible to do all the things you want to do there. You don't have a security privacy framework in place that can manage that level of personalization. You don't have the kind of modules and that customer experience design that allows you to put all these pieces together to make those seamless journeys. You don't have the AI tools embedded at the right place throughout the entire infrastructure. You don't have it an infrastructure that's real time or that can act on events that are happening in real time and make things happen for customers. Whether they might be at a store and do a contactless payment, and then they might do a P2P payment to somebody or receive a P2P payment for somebody else. They want those things happening in real time to facilitate the work that they're doing. And that has to be in place. So these architectural components start to pop out from each of these imperatives. And in that one, you know, the report lists a few of the key elements that are needed, from, you know, real-time systems to, you know, AI tools that allow for that deeper insights about the data and the context of that person. So in that case, I think that's the number one problem. It's universal. It's not a customer-consumer issue. It's also a business customer issue and a corporate customer issue. You know, if you're contextualizing information that you know about a corporate customer around their treasury management solutions and supporting them in their payment reconciliation processes, that's all enhanced by these same exact capabilities to be able to more personalize that for that business and that corporation. So these become universal across different types of businesses. That's, by the way, one reason why, you know, in some of these reports we're doing, we've sort of done away with this separate reporting on corporate businesses and our corporate business tools and retail business tools, because it's all merging at this point with capabilities. And to Jauke, your point there, that those domains that we might pick to choose to begin that modernization process, they can be a consumer domain, they can be a business domain, they can be a corporate domain. It doesn't really matter. And we're all going to get to that same, you know, place. But customer experiences is really, I think, the driving one. All the other ones sort of fit under that.
Sure, maybe a little bit provocative, but like, customer experience is already important for the last 20 years, right? So
in that sense, what, you know, this all screams to me, it has to be omnipresent, right? It has to be ubiquitous. It has to be, to a degree, relevant and personalized. I hear this for the last 20 years. So why are people not doing this? What is blocking them? It screams platform. Let's go platform. But why is it so hard? Like, we know the theory, but like, why is it so hard? And what would you recommend people to say, like, you know, versus the lip service of customer experience or la 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 customer centricity, and actually nobody is solving the root cause?
Right. Well, we've seen in the last probably 4 years, 4.5 years, 5 years, we've seen a continuing decline in the CX scores in the banking sector. Kind of peaked right around the beginning of the pandemic and has gone down ever since. Some might say that's just sort of, you know, the pandemic itself, artifacts. But I think that if you read the data, there's less people going to branches. There's less people involved in that. There's much more digital experiences that people are having, and it's a result of the pandemic as well as just sort of the ongoing digital transformation of this. But those kinds of experiences cannot deliver the kind of emotional response that customers use when they make those customer experience decisions about which is the better brand, which is the better company, with the better systems and processes and experiences that they're providing. That lack of emotion that comes out of the digital experience, I think, is the reason why we've seen those scores drop over the last 4 or 5 years.
So it's a bit of a slow decline, but it's not severe enough to wake people up.
And I also think, because of 20 years, or even, you know, maybe it's a good 14 years, you know, since the end of the Great Recession era, you know, we've seen this steady drumbeat on CX. And I've seen, with with our banking clients that they've sort of gotten tired of hearing about it. You know, I think and at one level, generative AI is like a blessing to them. It's like, oh, finally something we can focus on. It's not CX. You know, if you go to any bank, I don't think anything has changed really. And I think each channel has gotten a little better and has had more data infused and has been able to do more things that they couldn't do and give customers more tools and capabilities. But some of the fundamental things have never changed. So the channels are not really connected. People talk a lot about, you know, omni-channel stuff. You know, none of that stuff has really actually happened. I can call a call center and have a chat at first, and then a call center interaction. They have no idea what I just chatted about, and they don't know what I've been looking at. And I have to retell my story to everybody I talk to. So it's been, they've never fixed that. They've never, you know, they've done some stuff around the edges when it comes to, you know, sort of personalization. You know, it's nice on the mobile app, but it doesn't do me much if I have to call or go into a branch and have a transaction. I don't really see anything happening. It's not proactive. It's definitely not real time yet. So there's a lot of pieces of this that just haven't ever been done that customers are seeing in other businesses and other experiences and are making the connection saying, I can do it here. I don't know why I can't do it here. And I actually can do it here with this other bank or this other fintech. And so that's the big risk for banks is that, you know, if you don't stay focused, we could call it something else. If you don't want to call it CX, Mr. or Ms. Banker, you know, we can call it something else. But at the end of the day, it's still about how do you get your customers the kinds of experiences that they're expecting, contextual, personalized, you know, proactive, frictionless, seamless across channels and so on. We're just not there yet.
Jort, I'll share you a story, like, and maybe this is also related to urgency. I think with Backbase, we did our annual conference. I think it was 2019, and we were thinking about the thematic approach there. We called it the neo-reality, 2019. Just talking about the rise of Nubank, SoFi, Revolut. So let's do the math. 5 years later, Revolut, 50 million customers. Nubank, 100 million customers. SoFi, follow the quarterly results, to the moon. So, and it's just in 5 years, right? And there you see kind of players that actually had kind of the brave approach to take a single platform approach to build everything pre-integrated. And initially people would say, oh, it's just retail. It's just a monoline. It's just payments. But like within 5 years, just extrapolate that impact for the next 5 years. That's going to be interesting. What's your view?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, I don't think banks think in those terms, which is one of the big challenges for anybody selling technology or capabilities to banks, because they've been around for 100 years.
It's essential for the bank. Forget about selling to banks. Let's just about being running a bank.
I think they don't think that way because they don't see the existential nature of it. They still think, we've been here for 100 years. We're going to be here for another 100 years. We can do these kinds of things like we've been doing. We're making money. I think that's one of the biggest problems. It's going to happen in sneaky ways for these businesses. They're going to realize they can't do certain things. The only way they can get through the next wall, whether it's in the U.S., a $10 billion asset level or something, is to combine with others. By combining with others, it might not feel like we've disappeared, but you have, you know. And, you know, we don't talk in terms in the United States of BB&T and SunTrust anymore. It's now Truist. The reason they merged was for this technology capability that they could now put together that they had to, because there's no way they're going to keep up with the PNC banks and U.S. banks and even up at the upper echelon. It's happening around the world with businesses. So, you know, this is going to be an era, I think, of consolidation, of some level of disappearing of businesses as these others take over. I do think there's going to be a bit of a pause in some of those fintech, you know, capabilities. I think Nubank and SoFi and even Chime and others, Revolut, are going to be fine. I think there's a host of those smaller ones that are going to be weeded out as a result of some of the challenges they've had over the last year. I think that's also playing into some of the reluctance to make some big moves. It's because I think there are bankers, and I've talked to some that would say, you know, we were very worried about fintechs in 2019 and 2022, but now it seems like we don't have to worry about that anymore. So there's unfortunately, there's some signals that the wrong signals, you know.
I've been thinking that as well. Like, I mean, there was everybody and his grandmother was kind of launching a fintech. That was, of course, crazy and all these neobanks. But like, if you look at the long-term winners, there's a cohort of at least 10 companies that have like, let's not even go to China with WeChat and Alibaba. Like these are like 2050, like that is just beyond, so the Western world in that sense is already, running behind. I would go back, if I were a banker, I would go back to that thesis. If you're going to write off the Revolut or the news, I would be very careful there, but I'm just, and it's one. So let's see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, it's not going to take much. There's some big banks that are making some big moves that are going to make them very flexible and very capable. We've talked about this in our predictions around, you know, another big, large, massive bank is going to make a decision to go with one of these, you know, very lean core platforms and begin building, you know, across the entire tech stack, this hyper modularization of the business. And you've got Chase already having picked Thought Machine for the retail bank business in the U.S. and report to bring that across the globe. They've got 10x banking in there for their digital business in the U.K. So they're moving in that direction. Lloyds is another one. Standard Chartered is another one. And then there's a host of others that have made these decisions. We're going to see another big one say something, I think, in the next year, or at least that they're making that kind of move. The problem with that is that, you know, that next tier down of business, which is where they're stuck. I feel those guys are stuck more than anybody. They are, you know, maybe anywhere from $50 billion to $200 billion in assets, or maybe 250 or something. It's in the U.S., you might call them regionals or even some, you know, they're stuck at some level.
Yeah, they are. I disagree and I agree. I think they are in a perfect position if they would have the mindset.
If they would have the mindset. I totally agree with you there.
The platform technologies are there. Like, and by the way, I don't think you have to do a lot of these core modernizations. You could also really think this whole debate, do you modernize the core? Do you modernize your channel layer? We always kind of say like, hey guys, probably maybe in this channel layer, there's kind of the e-commercial banking. That's where all your commercial banking, your private customers, your consumers are. They are there. You can absolutely modernize that at a fraction of the cost. So I would politely disagree to say like it's not only a game for the big guys, if I may.
I don't think it is a game for the big guys only. I feel like the little guys, the medium guys, you know, as it were, the medium guys have, the big guys have so much money. And by the way, it's not everybody, you know, you go talk to one big guy and they have the exact opposite opinion of Chase. They don't believe these modular systems are even going to be relevant in a few years. They want to wait and see. So at that level, you have the differences. At the next level, I've heard more people say, you know, we did this in the early 2000s. We've moved off of our own homegrown COBOL systems to a platform that's a bit of a monolith. It's hard for us to make any changes. We're stuck with their roadmap and so on. And when it's a change, it changes the whole system. So we have to be ready across the board for the upgrade. They say, I can't go back to our finance team and our executive team and say, we've got to do this again. So that gets to your point about progressive modernization and how to pull that thread that's going to unravel the whole sweater. But but in the short run, I think they are less likely because of some of their past experiences, even failed implementations, to take on this challenge, which is why I say they're stuck. I also think they have the biggest opportunity because if they did, they have the scale to do it. And then they have the ability to sort of leapfrog some of those large banks that are not taking those chances. And even be able to, sometimes the largest banks, even if they have the capital and even at Chase are, you know, immense battleships that take a long time to make that turn. And the smaller you are, the more efficient and fast you could be if you took this approach.
Yeah. I was just thinking like, regardless, mid-size, regional, super regional, like we have our strategic offsite. Okay. Number one question, can we stay in the lock-in situation? Is that a viable business model to stay held captive? What's the answer?
And by captive, you mean
it in either proprietary systems or held kept in a boxed bunch of vendors where, you know, you have this potential threat. Whatever's happening in this world, in the commercial finance, leasing, all these markets are in flux, and you're with your legacy provider and you are somewhere in the queue, and, you know, maybe in 27 you got an upgrade.
Well, I think the you know, the danger is that somebody else is going to do that, and I think others are already doing that. And you are stuck with the inability to evolve your products quickly, that the innovation capability, you're stuck with the you know, being able to even add capabilities to your products, whether they be, you know, an AI element to it, or just even slightly change the nature of the product and the way it might earn rewards or earn other credits. You can't really do those things easily. Others can, you know, like turn around you in circles. And that's the danger, is not so much that you can't continue to serve your customers the way you've been doing. It's that you can't serve your customers the way they want to be doing, back to that imperative. And somebody else is going to come along that can. And they're also going to make it extremely easy to make the switch. I think that's one problem that some of these big businesses don't sort of see, is that it's almost like, well, they had their banking relationship with us. They know us. They trust us, and so on. And it's very hard for them to make that change. It's actually very easy, you know, with many of these capabilities. And trust is not really built on the kinds of things that most banks believe it is built on. It is often a different set of variables. We have a whole set of research around trust and banks, and it's often things. Just the top variables tend to be dependability and accountability, and these things that anybody can replicate and sort of swoop in and provide a level of trust that you can't necessarily beat, and now you're left with a product set that you can't innovate around. Others are doing circles around you.
To me, it feels like you have to run a blockbuster franchise, and Netflix is on the rise.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yep. And there's so many examples of that, and I've told those stories too. Tower Records was huge in the United States and disappeared as a result of the iPod and selling individual songs. You know, all those record chains pretty much disappeared. Vinyl and CDs and tapes disappeared. I mean, they're coming back, but at the scale of where they were, you know. And you know, even I was just thinking, even some of the big you know, audio companies that provided home audio, it's now focused on home theater for television and no longer focused on sort of listening, because that whole world has changed. So all these businesses that we thought were sort of stable, long-term solutions for things, they disappeared overnight. And the capabilities of a bank are not anything that anyone can't replicate. We see it with Apple. Apple does almost everything a bank can do. The only thing they don't want to do yet is go under the scrutiny of a regulator and have a license. But beyond that, Amazon, all these big tech companies could go there in a minute. You know, and certainly licensing. I know a lot of these fintechs, the ones you talked about, the top 10, are looking for banking licenses. That's going to change dramatically how they, you know, they play. And you're going to have to make those changes as a bank internally from the top, that engagement level platform, start thinking about things differently there. By the way, back to that first, imperative. I think one of the things that those engagement platforms yours included, is really help banks think differently about what they're offering to their customers. And it's not a product with a feature. It's an experience that involves a product and a service and a long-term relationship, and being able to design experiences and organize your business around that. But then also have domains and layers of capability that allow for a bank to manage the entire environment appropriately, I think answers that big question that we've had for years, which is like, how do I shift from product centric to customer centric? I think this model allows us to actually do that in a very efficient and simple way that a bank can understand. But you got to embrace this new technology platform capability to get there.
Yeah, if I'm in addition, I think you the way I think, like, you if you the legacy technology, but also maybe the legacy mindset in some cases, might be the obstacle. Like, how can you compete in this arena of agility with kind of those type of obstacles connected to your company? You there the only strategic answer is you have to break free, unless you get consolidated and somehow you're going to get a slow decline to a less desirable outcome.
Irrelevance, yeah. It is a cultural challenge. I think that, you know, it's a technology challenge. People don't necessarily understand how maybe the cloud works and how these modern DevOps CI, CD platforms and capabilities work, and the ability to work with microservices in a serverless environment and APIs and, you know, an event driven and code in that environment and use some of these low code, no code tools, but also supplement it with various kinds of codes in hooks and other things. That whole model is one aspect of it that people have to overcome. The second, I think you're talking about is a great one, is this cultural element that has to be overcome. And a cloud culture, innovation culture, a change in the way you think about organization of how you go to market, whether it's, you know, by product or by experience, change in the way you think about compliance and regulatory and what you can do and how you can, you know, make these big moves, but also stay regulatorily compliant. You know, these are big cultural things that have to be solved as well. So while banks are progressively modernizing different components of their business, they also have to do this, I think, quite an extensive change management approach to sort of manage through that as well. You can't just put in all this new technology and hope that everybody's going to start behaving differently, but it will certainly enable them to behave differently. And then you got to sort of make that happen.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a doom scenario, but it's also very good. Like, we are blessed to work with like so many banking executives in the US, around the world, like where you see those change makers, you see the people, and I can just attest to everybody listening to that. It's totally possible. It is totally possible for any bank of any scale. And there's a lot of advice and there's a lot of best practices out there. So it almost like now feel like boiling an ocean. I can assure everybody that there's a very good path. It's going to be intense. It's going to be intense and proper change management. But the formula is there. Technology is there. And also the people to partner with. So in
the
that
people sense, to partner with. I was just going to say there's a lot of support. And you know, these things aren't, to use a worn out term, these things aren't rocket science. It is straightforward. It's easy to sort of lay out all the things that are necessary. And you can, work with a partner who can lay it all out for you. And you just have to do the whole thing. That's, I think, the big challenge. There's no shortcut. You just have to go through it. And I have not seen bankers who cannot make that shift. I've seen small companies in the 2 billion asset range that are, you know, with 70 or even less branches and, you know, just serve a small region of a state. And those companies are, potentially you'd think are the least likely to make these changes. Some of them are on the forefront of this and their people are excited about, you know, learning these new capabilities. And they also, they have a management team that embraces sort of a customer first mentality and a customer experience orientation. And they understand that products are just tools to make those customer experiences come to bear. And they are as innovative as probably more so than a Chase and some of those large banks.
Maybe to connect to that one, last week we had Ryan Brooks in the podcast, the Chief Digital Officer from WSECU. Very much a mid-range credit union. If you listen to his story, clear change maker, change agent, where the whole institution over the past 5 years moved to the new model. And listen to the episode. It's a beautiful journey, which is certainly not an easy one, but clearly the ingredients are there and already have been there for many years. Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.